Thank you for listening to this episode of the Tucumcari, New Mexico Area News Podcast, a roundup of what's newsworthy and what's going on in the Clay County area. Like our page on Facebook and join in on the discussion at the Tucumcari, New Mexico Area News discussion page. And now, here is your host, Gordon Runyon.
Hello to all my fellow citizens in the Tucumcari area, which I take to mean Tucumcari, Clay County, and anyone else that cares to download this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Gordon Runyon. On a windy day that Winnie the Pooh would characterize as blustery, sitting comfortably by the wood stove in my house, you might hear the wood crackling and all of that. I hope everything's going well for you today. I want to take a few minutes of your time. Thankfully, I appreciate you taking the time. But in just a few minutes, I want to discuss some bills that are going through the legislature in Santa Fe. As reported by the Santa Fe New Mexican, there are at least two bills that are currently in progress. Wow, there's the wind. You might hear that. Two bills making their way through that might have a chance of getting all the way, becoming law. They won't both become law, but one might. And they're aimed at increasing the minimum wage in New Mexico. One of them, I believe, has a very sudden jump to $15 an hour. And the other one takes a little bit more time, like increasing the minimum wage by steps with the goal of eventually getting to the same place. I think one of the proposals, it might be that first one, mentions not only $15 an hour, but every year raising it automatically based on cost of living increase calculations. Now, of course, as you read the comments underneath these articles, you're going to find the Enlightenment left using the same arguments that have ever always been used to justify a minimum wage increase. Arguments that have never been proven, and in fact, they're not really arguments, they're just emotional statements. We need this. Families can't survive without this. There's never any theory offered about how a minimum wage is going to help. And you have the Enlightenment right making the same arguments that are always made to oppose the minimum wage. These arguments generally have actual numbers and statistics behind them, and maybe some economic theory as well. The key is that people who propose minimum wage laws almost uniformly were never in charge of trying to meet a payroll. And so they have no experience with business. They're very much like that rock star new Congress lady who's out in the open sort of socialist, AOC, they call her. I can't pronounce her name correctly, so I won't disrespect her by trying. But she's apparently under the delusion that money just appears out of nowhere. And the only reason why you wouldn't give people more money is because you're a hater and you just don't like people. And the question of how these things are going to be paid for is just a hater's question, and it doesn't really need to be taken seriously. Well, the right has its own series of answers. Generally, I believe they're more solid, but the right really doesn't understand the morality that is at issue. I think the minimum wage would be destructive. I think all the best evidence that I've seen as I've researched it, and I've written at least one article about this that's been published online at a news outlet, and I was examining the effect of the $15 minimum wage that went into effect in the Seattle area. My thought, from everything I've seen, maybe you could show me something different. But from what I've seen, the minimum wage law doesn't really do what it's advertised as doing. if the minimum wage is increased and the economy itself remains fairly stagnant, then what's going to happen is that prices and goods and services will have to increase as well. And so, yeah, you may be bringing home more money in your paycheck, but now everything that you want to buy is precisely that percentage more costly than it was before the wage went into effect. So you're really not gaining any ground. And there are other things that are clear as a bell. If you want to know what those right-wing enlightenment arguments are, they're all over the internet. So I'm not here to explain those to you. But I generally think they're solid from an economic standpoint. What I want to explain to you is that this is a moral issue. And the moral issue isn't how do we take care of poor people. The moral issue that's at stake here is who gets to tell people what they have to do with their money. In this case, do voters get to tell employers how they must spend their money? And right off the bat, you see that that's really a question of who has control of the money. And it's inescapable. What that really means is who owns the money? For real. Really, who owns the money? And every time voters get together or elected officials get together and they decide to tell people how they must spend their money, the underlying claim is, we own that. We're letting you use it, but now we're going to tell you how you must use it. The Bible speaks against this. Anytime the Bible speaks about money and transactions of business between people. Particularly, I'd like to mention to you today the parable that Jesus teaches in Matthew chapter 20. It's kind of a longish parable, so I won't read it for you. I'll just summarize it, but I encourage you to go take a look at that. Matthew chapter 20, starting in verse 1. And in this parable, Jesus tells the story of a master who owns a vineyard, and at the beginning of the day, which to the first century agrarian society he was preaching to, that generally meant 6 a.m., so at 6 a.m., he sends his foreman out the master goes out and he begins to hire workers. These are workers who are available to be hired for the day in the marketplace. So he goes out and he hires some workers and tells them, go work in my vineyard, and at the end of the day, I will pay you a denarius, which was generally accepted as being like a day's wage for working men. He goes back at 9 a.m. and finds more guys standing around. He said, you go work in my vineyard too and I'll pay you. At noon, he does the same thing. At 3 p.m., he does the same thing. And 3 p.m., that was considered the ninth hour of the working day. 9 out of 12. So we're getting close here. And then he says that the master went out at the 11th hour, which is 5 p.m., he finds some guys standing around. He said, what have you been doing all day? Well, we're just standing here. What's your issue? Are you lazy or what? And, no, nobody's hired us. And he says to them, well, you go work in my vineyard for the last hour and I'll pay you what's appropriate. And say so they go and work. Now the workday ends at 6. The master tells his foreman, okay, it's time to settle up with our workers, so pay them their wages, beginning with those who were hired last. Okay, so the workers are done. They line up to receive their wages for the day. The ones who came in at the 11th hour were paid a denarius, which is a full day's wage. So this is pretty generous of the master. He's going to pay him a full day's wage for 1 hour. Now they go to the next group, and they also get a denarius, though they had only been there for a few hours more than that. And people at the very beginning, they start thinking, wow, he's giving a denarius to these people who barely worked. That's extremely generous. So when he gets to us, I bet he's going to, what, double or triple what he said he was going to give us. Because we deserve more than them. We worked a lot more than they did. Well, then when it comes to the people that were hired first, the foreman hands them their denarius apiece. And Jesus said, these workers become indignant. And they say, I know it's hard to imagine, but they say, well, how is this fair? You gave a denarius to these jokers who barely worked, and we've been out there all day in the sun working, and you give us the same as you give to them. And the master says to them, what wrong have I done you? When I hired you to work, I said, work all day and I'll give you a denarius. And here I am, I'm making good on my word. You agreed to this. And then he also says, or as a way of bolstering what he has just told them, he asks them a rhetorical question. Do I not have the right to do with my own things what I want to do? If I want to be generous with them, who are you to tell me that I can't do that? And so you see, there is a spiritual element, of course, to that parable, and it probably has to do with the fact that over the history of the kingdom of God, there will be some of those who show up late in history who do great things, or maybe they don't do as much stuff, but they kind of get the same reward as if they were one of these who worked a lot harder and longer and stuff like that. But see, the way parables work is you can't get the spiritual lesson unless the physical lesson is right. And so the physical lesson of that parable is that the master had every right to pay his workers what he wanted to pay them as long as he didn't pay them less than he agreed. And when somebody wanted to come to him and tell him, no, you're not doing right, his rightful answer, the answer that shut down the objection was, don't I have the right to do with my stuff what I want to do? I haven't done anything wrong. I've kept my word. We made a bargain. And I kept my end, you kept your end, and so we're done. Well, what happens then when the government decides to set price controls and wage controls? What the government is doing is claiming to have ownership over your stuff, claiming to have ownership over anyone's stuff who gets involved in any kind of business deal with you. If I go to the store and I buy something and I'm charged a sales tax, what that means is the government really believes it owns the transaction itself and is therefore deserving of a cut of whatever business deal was made between me and the merchant. And it's the same way between an employee and an employer, like the master and the workers that were hired at the first hour of the day. They made a deal. Nobody forced either side to make the deal. They were both willing, and they agreed upon a price. So the biblical concept is that this is the way business works. And you don't see in that parable any government agency coming in to reprimand the master for not being quote-unquote fair. Right? It just doesn't happen. And this is another instance of what we have said here, and what I anticipate we will say quite often, is that the Bible defines a very narrow mission for civil government. And that narrow mission can be stated in pretty much four words. And those four words are, punish the bad guys. Punish the bad guys. Find the people who actually do wrong things, who actually hurt people or victimize people or destroy property. Punish the bad guys. Find them and punish them. And so anything else that government attempts to do outside that mission, that's an unbiblical step being taken by the government. Now, my conservative friends who are listening to this, they all get up in arms and they start clapping and cheering because, amen, let's get rid of all those liberal do-gooder nanny state programs and stuff like that. And I'd agree, let's get rid of them all. The Bible doesn't authorize any of those. But my conservative friends, please listen to me. I'm also talking to you. you have your favorite socialistically funded programs, just the same as the liberals do. The liberal wants the government to look like a kindly grandmother in a kitchen apron, making sure everybody's feeling good and are well fed and cared for. But the conservative wants the government to look like a rather strict kind of disciplinarian father in a military uniform. And so you want things to be paid for by the government. You want government to be doing jobs the Bible doesn't tell it to do. It's just you have a different set of jobs. You're in favor of things like a domestic police force, and whose job is not to punish bad guys. Listen, police don't punish bad guys. Bad guys are punished after they're convicted in a court of law, and police are not involved in that. Police are a domestic army that occupies these United States, and conservatives are all in favor of it. They think it's patriotic and Christian to want that. Y'all are in favor of a prison industrial complex, where now, because we've decided it might be better to have privately owned prisons, now we have prisons for profit, where the only way the business makes a profit is to arrest more people and put more people in jail. This is not the business of government. It's not the business of government to provide health care for anybody. It's not the business of government to educate anybody. It's not the business of government to make sure that an employer treats his employees fairly. Bottom line, you don't like how you're being treated, you don't have to be there. Nobody's putting a gun to your head. And if enough employees of a bad employer decide, heck with this, I don't need this, and they leave, suddenly the employer is going to have to rethink his practices, or he's got nobody to do the jobs that he needs done. And so to bring this back to the minimum wage, it really comes back to the fact that, biblically speaking, government has no business telling business people what sorts of deals they must make, which is exactly what the minimum wage law does. It says to somebody looking for a job, you're not allowed to accept a lower wage. And it says to the employer, you're not allowed to offer a lower wage. You know, some of these low-skilled people who just really want to work and want to find a foot in the door and get involved in the industry of their choice, they might be willing to work for less than minimum wage, knowing that they will gain skills and training and experience and climb up the ladder. But they're not allowed to do that. And it's not even allowed to be an offer that's on the table. This is unbiblical, and it's by definition unjust. And so I really want you to think about these things. Find your state representative, your state senator, find Congressman Ben Lujan, find your senators, and just let them know, you know what, we're sick of it. We've had enough of it. Government telling us what to do. How about just let us try freedom? That might be a good thing.
We hope this episode of the Tucumcari, New Mexico Area News has been a blessing to you. Remember to like our page on Facebook to stay current on what's happening in Coy County. We are honored to be a part of the Reconstructionist Radio Podcast Network. Either Christ is Lord of all, or He's not Lord at all.